3 weeks into New York's fiscal year, state lawmakers gave their stamp of approval to a state budget worth about $237 billion, with record levels of spending across a variety of areas, including education. To break down where Democratic lawmakers and Governor Hochul prioritized state spending for the fiscal year, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Nathan Gusdorf, director of the liberal-leaning Fiscal Policy Institute. Welcome back to the show, Nathan.
Hi, David. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. So, for starters, can you put into context how much New York is planning to spend compared to recent years? I have to imagine we're continuing to grow, but how much is the growth?
So this is a good question, and we'll have to talk about why it's hard to answer. There are two different categories that you have to look at in understanding spending, total spending and spending changes in the state budget. One is the whole budget number, which includes state funding and federal funding, and the other is just the state's share of that total spending, or what we call mostly state operating funds. We would typically look at state operating funds because federal money fluctuates, and what we really want to know from a fiscal policy perspective is how much is the state on its own taxing and spending. With this budget so far, we actually don't have that information yet. In about a month and a half, we'll get detailed financial plans, and that will explain some of these details. But at this time, we actually don't know some of those basic numbers. So we can only look at the top line total budget growth, and that tells us something. But to get to the point, this year's budget is $237 billion. That is inflation adjusted, actually a decrease of just under 0.5% in total spending. It's a few billion dollars higher than what the governor had proposed, and it's a few billion dollars higher than last year's budget. So what that shows us is that there is some spending growth. There should be spending growth year to year because the economy grows. And in recent years, we've had inflation. And so that requires higher spending growth. But we actually don't know how much of that spending growth is attributable to new federal money versus changed state expectations on how much the state can spend. So at this point, those of us who follow the budget closely are actually in the dark about some of the big structural facts about changes in state spending.
Yeah, in terms of what we know about state spending at this point, where does the information come from? Is this just based on press releases that state policymakers have put out? Are you able to glean stuff from the appropriations bills and the Article 7 bills? What does our understanding stem from?
We basically look at statements by the governor and the legislature. We look at the legislation. We look at the appropriations bills that tell you how much they want to spend on, say, a particular capital project or give to a particular agency. But the truth is that you cannot really put the pieces together yourself, even if you're quite expert in these matters, just by looking at those bills. You really have to wait until the state's division of budget releases financial plan tables that tell you how all these different numbers actually fit together. And as I said earlier, there are a few facts that we would normally expect to see in these, even in the press releases right after they do the budget, that we actually don't have right now.
So the final number that's been put out by the governor and the legislative leaders is nearly $4 billion above what the governor proposed, which was also above what we spent in fiscal year 2024, which ended March 31st. So when you think about those numbers, billions of actual dollars, why is it important for you to frame this in the inflationary percentage realm of things?
There are actually two different economic indicators or criteria that you should look at to make sense of that number. One is actually what's the size of the state economy? Otherwise, it's just a kind of decontextualized number of dollars. And the state economy is over $2 trillion in terms of the state's gross domestic product, or what you'd call gross state product. So that's one good way to get a sense of like the relative size of the budget. The other is to look at year-to-year spending growth on an inflation-adjusted basis, because that essentially tells you the real value of the money you're spending, because the costs of goods and services rise every year with inflation. And so on an inflation-adjusted basis, this is a 0.4% decrease. You know, everyone knows that we've had relatively high inflation over the last few years. And so when you account for necessary and fair increases in, say, pay for public sector workers, the rising costs of contracts that the state uses, that's how you make sense of whether we're seeing real spending growth, or in this case, what's a slight decrease, roughly flat spending year to year.
Let's pivot to the two biggest areas of state spending year to year, which are healthcare and education, both areas that Governor Hochul, at least initially, was looking to slow the rate of growth in her executive proposal. Turning to healthcare, where the bulk of the spending is Medicaid dollars, what do we know at this point about how much of that $237 billion is going to go towards healthcare?
I'm glad this was your next question, because it's actually the biggest source of uncertainty for those of us who are fiscal analysts in breaking down these numbers. Something interesting came up in this legislative session, which was a proposal to tax managed care organizations, which are part of the health insurance and health provision system, in a way that you tax them. Then you actually rebate the tax payments. So nobody, in a sense, at the end of the day, is really paying that tax, but it brings in new money from the federal government. This was not in the governor's proposal. It was something that the legislature raised, and it has been incorporated into the final budget. So we'll have to see the numbers that the state puts out, but this is potentially a multi-billion dollar increase in federal funding for Medicaid spending. And one thing this does is allows the state to address some longstanding and ongoing challenges in its healthcare budget, including the fact that around a third of the state's hospitals face very serious financial distress. So everyone is looking for money to shore up the finances of those hospitals, which generally treat poor and more marginalized communities. The other thing is just year-to-year rising Medicaid costs that the state thinks it can't handle. So Medicaid has been at the center of a lot of these fiscal questions. And the other big part of the Medicaid debate has been looking at rising long-term care costs. The governor had multiple proposals to cut wages for home care workers and implement other reforms to try to decrease or control the growth of those costs. They were not favored by the legislature, and most of those proposals were rejected.
When you look at the landscape that's emerging based on what we know about it and the inclusion of this Medicaid taxing plans, so to speak, are we setting ourselves up for a system a couple of years down the road where the state's going to have some major Medicaid bills that we might not be able to shoulder without increased taxes? I think about the federal dollars we're talking about tapping into on the Medicaid front in particular. That's not a long-term funding source. My understanding is that it's something that'll run out after a couple of years. So any concerns about setting ourselves up for a cliff, so to speak?
It's a reasonable concern to raise. California actually pioneered this strategy. I think the thought for New York's lawmakers was, if they're doing it, we should be able to do it. And then there's some reasonable concern that, as with any approach to increase federal spending through state lawmaking, that it's subject to various kinds of federal regulatory decisions. And so it's possible that the strategy would get shut down by the federal government at some point in the future. And that's definitely a risk. The thought seems to be on the policy side, and we would generally agree with this, that there are some very serious, very immediate concerns in state health spending, and that we need an injection of money, again, in order to ensure that we can keep providing decent health care to a lot of people who are in need, and to shore up the hospitals in their communities. So what the state really needs to look at is strategizing around a potential transition plan, either finding other more equitable areas of cost savings or finding other revenue sources in the kind of medium-term situation where they would have to address a decrease in federal funding. And I think that's on everybody's mind, but they realized that it was worth it to get a pretty significant amount of money over the next few years.
Turning to the education side of the equation, specifically with state fundings to school districts, what's your take on the approximately, I think, $36 billion is the number I've seen that's being committed for state education aid?
This was, so as you say, this was the other big money debate in this year's budget, in part because the governor had proposed a reduction in the formula for increasing school aid. So just to be very clear, the governor didn't propose a net decrease in school funding, but she did propose changing the formula that they used to calculate the increase in school funding in a way that would have cut almost $500 million out of the growth in education spending. Again, that was quite controversial. We think it was ultimately a good thing that that proposal was rejected. And so they stayed on course to basically increase school funding consistent with recent inflation. And this is all driven by the fact that for a long time we had really low inflation. Over the past few years, we've had relatively higher inflation, and school funding is in part based on what year-to-year inflation is. So for a lot of schools, it was important that they see their funding keep up with their spending needs that rise with inflation. There was an agreement to commission a study by the Rockefeller Institute to revisit this formula and potentially change it, which means that even though this fight kind of evened out to basically maintain the status quo in this budget cycle, next year and in future years, this issue will resurface as they debate the various features of that school funding formula and whether it's sustainable and whether it's equitable.
Well, we've mentioned a couple areas where the governor was unsuccessful in her efforts to curtail the growth of major spending areas. When you think about the state budget, do you think there were opportunities where growth could have been slowed or spending could have just outright been cut?
Potentially, it's always important that the state think about managing its finances wisely, but sometimes in budget conversations, we think there can be an excessive focus on trying to cut spending at the expense of finding the real opportunities for new social investment. And so that's actually why we go back to framing the state budget in proportion to the state economy and in terms of year-to-year inflation, because sometimes it can look like state spending is out of control if you just look at the top line number and say, wow, $237 billion. That sure seems like a lot of money. When in reality, this is a state with a very large economy that can sustain that spending. And so then when you look at social policy needs, in particular in our cases, addressing some of these healthcare needs, investing in housing and affordable housing construction, investing in the climate transition, we tend to see missed opportunities to increase public investment in a way that would be fiscally sustainable for New York with its pretty robust economy.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Fiscal Policy Institute Director Nathan Gusdorf. Nathan, thank you so much for making the time. And maybe when we've got some new financial documents, we can have you back on the show.
We will be happy to circle back when we all have more detailed information about these plans.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information. Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.